This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to a special Tuesday morning Oscar nominations day episode of Little Gold Men, the award season podcast from Vanity Fair.
It's such an honor to present this next award.
And here are the nominees.
And the Oscar goes to...
And the Oscar goes to...
And I can't deny the fact that you like me right now. You like me.
I'm the king of the world.
There's a mistake. Moonlight, you guys won Best Picture.
I am Katie Rich. I'm very excited, as you can tell. I'm here with Richard Lawson.
Hello.
With Rebecca Ford.
Hello.
And David Canfield.
Hi.
It's Oscar nominations day. Hopefully you're listening to this soon after we record it, because we want to get our thoughts out there quickly. And so many of you have sent us your questions and hot takes on the nominations, which we are just delighted for. As always, we'll get into all of that and our takes on the nominations. I'm still kind of vibrating from all of this. I always get like nervous and excited and like all these wild possibilities go through my brain. And when the dust settled and I could kind of look at it, I feel like these are pretty good nominations, you guys. Are we all feeling kind of good?
I was really pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, the ever-changing makeup of the Academy is really starting to show its results, and I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, I think we should start with what we were all talking about before this even started, and David, what you wrote about so well, Drive My Car. And people who've been listening to the show know that we've been eyeing it as this kind of surging force in the race. And David, as you wrote, like, even last week with the BAFTA nominations, you kind of got a hint that this might happen.
Yeah, I think one of the very first stories I wrote when I came to Vanity Fair was about the Academy invites from last year and how over half of them were from countries outside of the U.S. So it's a beat I've been following all season long, and I think it's really the main story of where the Academy's going right now, and I think that really showed today.
Mm-hmm.
Drive My Car's had an incredible rise from where it started at Cannes, where I don't even think it was considered one of the top potential Oscar breakouts of that festival, to sweeping the big critics' prizes for Best Picture, getting key BAFTA nominations, which showed that the industry had started to pay attention as a result of the critical support, and then just completely exploding this morning with picture, director, screenplay, and international film. It's pretty incredible, and I think it's true testament to how the Academy has grown.
I want to pull out one of the stats that our friend and past podcast guest Joe Reed is doing for us later today. I'm pulling together some of the stats and record-breaking nature of these nominations. And this is the first time since 1976 that two international films have been nominated in screenplay categories. That would be The Worst Person in the World, Richard Lawson's favorite film of the year, and Drive My Car. So congratulations to you personally, Richard.
Yeah, I did it. This is why you guys sent me to Cannes, because I see Worst Person in the World, write a rave review, and then, oh, wait, sorry, I didn't see Drive My Car at Cannes because it was too long. And I was intimidated.
You made up for it in due time, though.
Indeed.
Yeah, Richard, as like, you know, the critics who people can tend to be like, well, critics aren't Academy members. And often that turns out to be true. But I think with Drive My Car and some other things, like critical support really showed itself here. What were you kind of pleased to see?
Yeah, I mean, the Drive My Car stuff is great. I was so excited for Worst Person in the World, which has two nominations and one, you know, screenplay that I really didn't think it had a chance for. And, you know, maybe kicked out Aaron Sorkin, which is
probably
sort of a fascinating example of the old Academy versus the new one. And I think it's, you know, I think it's cool that, like, Penelope Cruz, which she seems sort of on the bubble, we weren't really sure, that she got in for Parallel Mothers, but also that it got a SCORE nomination. So that just shows, yeah, like, there is broader support for that film than maybe it looked like even just a couple weeks ago.
Rebecca, I'm going to turn to you to start talking about snubs, because I realize we started talking about high-class international features first, but what happened to House of Gucci, Rebecca? It only got nominated in makeup. The little monsters are furious.
Of course, Gaga, I feel like, was the biggest surprise. But we all knew that film was on the bubble. It just had such an uneven campaign and was not beloved in any way.
Sorry.
And so, I mean, that category was very competitive. So to me, I wasn't totally surprised. I mean, I think it did have a better chance in costumes, which we did not see it get. But overall, it just felt like Academy voters were just not into that film. So I think they should probably be very happy with their makeup nomination.
We were joking about the New York Film Critics being influential in terms of starting the drumbeat for Drive My Car back in December. I almost wonder, though, if her winning Best Actress, Gaga winning at New York Film Critics Circle, sort of put that in mind of Academy voters being like, we can't let that happen. You know, I don't know, maybe.
Don't let these critics break down our barriers. I mean, I would say, except for Best Actor, which went more or less how we expected with that fifth slot going to Javier Bardem, which could have been a few people, every acting category had some kind of big what shocker moment,
yeah,
right?
Definitely.
Definitely.
What was the biggest one for you, David?
I think Judi Dench over Caitríona Balfe for Belfast and supporting actress. I honestly don't know how the tabulation between lead and supporting kind of ends up netting out. I know that after the first round of voting, you kind of get placed depending on where you had the most support. But I wonder if there was enough clear support for Dench and supporting, where Balfe straddling lead and supporting hurt her, but she got in with Globes, BAFTA, SAG. She was behind a Best Picture candidate. I thought she was the main challenger to Ariana DeBose for the win. So that really shocked me. And I think it was also strange because Belfast didn't perform very well overall. So Judi Dench actually making that category after not popping up anywhere is a really interesting, specific show of support for her, I think, because the movie missed a lot of crafts categories and generally didn't show up in places where we thought it would. So that was my big, huh?
I'm told that, unfortunately, there were a lot of votes for someone named Caitríona Balfe, but they couldn't count those. and Judi Dench was just easier to spell. The Belfast not showing up in quote-unquote below-the-line categories is interesting because usually that can be used as evidence that it has a big Best Picture momentum. But I think this year we might be looking at Best Picture contenders that actually are not so well-supported, in the sort of deeper categories.
I do want to tell you I spent many minutes this morning trying to figure out this Caitríona Balfe situation. And I did talk to a few people because I do think there was some category confusion, and it probably was a mistake to submit her as supporting. You know, Jude Hill, the young actor in the film, was the only one submitted as lead, but voters can choose to vote for an actor in lead or supporting. You need to get enough votes in either category to be nominated, and I do think there was probably a lot of voting for her in lead and supporting, and it just sort of created a mess, because I do think there's no way you look at that film and it's Judi Dench, I understand. I'm a big fan of hers, but there's no way you look at her work in the film and think she did more heavy lifting than Caitríona. So yeah. I do wonder if people just put her in lead and it just created this sort of split mess that led her to not have that nomination.
Yeah, I understand the confusion more on like Lakeith Stanfield last year for Judas and the Black Messiah, who had been campaigned in lead and was like not really supposed to get in, but then wound up in supporting. But she seems like a supporting actress in this movie to me. Like I don't follow how so many people may have put her in actress.
I think that there may have been, this may have been a case of the actress category just being so scattered too. I mean, BAFTA, as far as I know, did not forecast a single nominee for Best Actress, which is gotta be unprecedented. And SAG missed a couple. They didn't nominate Kristen Stewart or Penelope Cruz. So it feels like a lot of different actresses were getting votes here. And I think Balfe probably found her way into that mix to some extent, but obviously not enough. But this just felt like such a messy category. And I think it's funny how this, Penelope Cruz is a very pleasant surprise, and Kristen Stewart more of a relief than anything, which we can get into. But this category isn't like hugely shocking to me. I think like 2 months ago, these predictions, you know, maybe pre-Gaga's NYFCC win would have felt about right. So there was a lot of movement in this category, but ended in a pretty, in the place we were in more at the beginning.
Yeah. Whereas in supporting actress, I think like Judi Dench and Jessie Buckley both were nowhere in the precursors, right? I mean, Jessie Buckley, I am thrilled to see. Like,
I'm so thrilled.
I think she's great in that movie as the struggling mom who is represented by the lost daughter. Jessie Buckley is my avatar. I'm so excited for her. But I was surprised.
It means no Ruth Negga, which is disappointing and kind of surprising. But, you know, I guess when things are shifting so much, like someone's going to, I think one of you wrote in a piece this morning, like hearts are going to break, you know, somewhere. It has to happen, unfortunately.
Yeah, passing showed up nowhere, which is not shocking, but I think disappointing for a movie that had really a lot of places it deserved to be nominated.
Can I talk about a big snub?
Yeah.
And it's one that is personally embarrassing to me because I believe last week I thought he could win. Denis Villeneuve.
Mm-hmm.
Not in director, which I thought was kind of a lock among, you know, Spielberg and Anderson and Campion. But I suppose I was very wrong about that.
Yeah. I mean, you were not the only one. We got a bunch of people texted us about Denis Villeneuve. And then Tanaya asked if there's a historical snub similar to Denis in director for, you know, like a huge craft popular movie. And the closest one I could come up with was Ron Howard in Apollo 13, which was also a Best Picture nominee. And he was kind of this famous, huge shock, which means in about 6 years, Denis will win for a mediocre biopic, I guess. So we can look forward to that.
Catherine Bigelow for Zero Dark Thirty is another one that kind of pops out to me.
Yeah, although that movie had like, it was like vaguely cursed by bad, you know, like in the last days of the meanest Oscar campaigns, it really suffered that way in a way Dune definitely hasn't.
Ben Affleck, Argo.
Yeah, well, and I think Anthony Brezenkant, our colleague, is working on a theory that Denis snub could really boost Dune's chances in the Best Picture race, which I don't think is, I think Power of the Dog is a pretty clearly strong contender, but, you know, we got 2 months to go.
It's very interesting that Dune got into screenplay over West Side Story, like that the writer's branch preferred that to West Side Story, but Spielberg got in over Villeneuve. I mean, I'm of the theory that Hamaguchi was not even five there. I think that Drive My Car was so strong, it's going to be strongest in director based on how that branch has voted over the last few years. So I think someone else knocked Villeneuve out pretty narrowly.
Maybe Spielberg.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the Tony Kushner snub in screenplay, even though I think Dune's adaptation is pretty accomplished.
Like,
huge deal. But I'm going to, I tweeted this, I was going to be mad forever about how Tony Kushner lost for the Lincoln screenplay and then didn't even get nominated for really incredible adaptation work on West Side Story. Yeah, although, sure. I was worried that West Side Story would, like, really, really falter, and it didn't. So I was happy with that.
Kaminsky.
Yeah. I mean, like, pretty strong across all the crafts as far. I mean, I guess it missed editing. But yeah, I think it performed about as well as we could have hoped at this point.
The editing stat for Best Picture is always very strong. And it's interesting, you know, unless it's like a 1917 or a Birdman, which are one take illusions. So it's interesting that Power of the Dog made it and neither Belfast nor West Side Story did. So that's a pretty good sign for Power.
Well, we haven't talked about Power of the Dog really yet. And it overperforming, 12 nominations is close to the record of how many a single film can get. And then Jesse Plemons rode those coattails, which I found a pleasant surprise. Were you guys surprised by that too?
I was not.
Ah.
I won't say anything else. I was not surprised.
Well, he and Kirsten Dunst both getting nominated is a really, it's delightful to imagine their household. And the Cruz Bardem household this morning. That's a, I'm not sure that's ever happened before, to married or otherwise art partner people being nominated together.
And the me and Andrew Garfield household.
Yeah, you know, no, yeah, I've been excited for you guys too.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the reviews director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, Jay Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as a specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.
This message comes from Apple Card. Earn up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase, every day. Then, grow it at 4.50% annual percentage yield when you open a savings account with Apple Card. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card subject to credit approval. Savings available to Apple Card owners subject to eligibility. Savings accounts provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, member FDIC. Terms apply. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How is your social battery right now? What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/littlegoldmen today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp. HELP.com/littlegoldmen.
So do we think there's anything of note about the fact that 50% of the Best Picture nominees don't have acting nominations? Is that significant, or is just kind of a fluke of the, you know, mandated 10 nominations this year?
I don't think it's significant. I do think it's probably because we have the 10 in picture. And I feel like there's often a lot of performances that transcend the film's capabilities of being nominated most years.
The Tammy Faye effect, you might say?
Yeah, the Tammy Faye effect. That's a good way to describe it. To me, I mean, I saw that sort of floating around out there, and I didn't find that totally shocking. I don't know, David?
I mean, I think to an extent, you see different branches of the Academy lifting up certain films. Like, I think one of Rebecca's smartest predictions was Nightmare Alley for Best Picture, which I totally agreed with that it would make it through. And that's completely on the backs of the various craft branches and having enough below the line support to vault it in, where even Cate Blanchett was nominated for SAG, didn't make it through here. So that was not the acting branch's work, I don't think. And conversely, you look at Being the Ricardos, which got completely blanked by every single branch except the acting branch, which loved it and gave even J.K. Simmons a nomination, but did not have. I never thought it was a serious picture contender, to be honest. And that's because I expected the other branches to not go for it. So I think it's just partly a signal of how the Academy is evolving and how the different branches are gravitating to different kinds of things. But it's interesting, too, that something like Drive My Car is, you know, it's never really going to be considered for unfortunate reasons in the below the line categories. But it still, I think, was pretty safely in there based on how well it did in screenplay and director.
Yeah.
I guess the sub kind of question is like when, you know, we see, there are foreign language nominations for acting happen, but they're far less frequent. You know, you think about Parasite not getting any nominations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hidetoshi Nishijima from Drive My Car seemed like maybe distant, maybe. I don't know. He won some big critics prizes. But that seems to be like the actors branch, for whatever reason, is not quite catching up with or working at the same sort of momentum as the director's branch or whatever else.
Yeah.
I do hope as the Academy continues to become more international, perhaps the acting categories will open up, because there is something about, I remember the Parasite year, like a lot of people didn't learn those actors' names. You know, they just say, oh, the guy from Parasite. And I find that sort of a frustrating pattern. So I do hope, you know, people spend the time to really become familiar with these international actors in the future.
Yeah. If you're watching Drive My Car or Worst Person in the World, I mean, those have extremely worthy performances, and it's frustrating. Yeah. They're so far out of the conversation, although maybe they weren't as far as we think. It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
I have one more Gaga question, which is...
Gaga questions.
Does anyone think that her campaigning hurt her? I feel like right as voting was happening, the memes started to spread a little bit more rapidly, and there was more of an awareness, I detected anyway, that she was going really hard.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if that had anything to do with it.
Especially for a movie that, as we were saying, like, clearly wasn't all that beloved and, like, you know, not like, way more so than A Star Is Born, which was a pretty, you know, got nominated for plenty and didn't really win enough. But she was kind of dragging this movie along with her and clearly didn't have the power to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think this is that controversial thing to say, but actors can be petty. And, you know, like, they saw her in A Star Is Born and said, great, good job, you did it, kid, like, welcome. And then for the second one, they're like, whoa, an accent and this campaign? No. Like, you need to put a little more time into this before we,
Stanislavski method?
Right. Like, we need, you know, she's not done baking yet or whatever. I think that maybe there was pushback against, like, her just kind of being declared award-worthy movie star after two films, and they were just like, let's pump the brakes on this.
Also, looking at the actor and actress lineup, I'm doing this off the top of my head, I think actor is all previous nominees, and actress, the only non-previous nominee is Kristen Stewart. That's a lot of veterans that wound up in those categories. And supporting is different. There's a lot of first-timers in there, but you can see that the power of just being really, really famous for acting already in there.
Yeah, and three of the best actress are winners. Two of the best actor are previous winners. Like, it's,
Speaking of A Star Is Born, and Rebecca, you were talking about Nightmare Alley. Someone did text wanting to talk about Bradley Cooper's snub in Licorice Pizza, which I'm furious about. But he is nominated. He's a producer on Nightmare Alley. And his previous Oscar nomination before this was not for A Star Is Born. It was as producer of Joker. Bradley Cooper's Oscar track record remains so incredibly strange. I mean, I'm happy for him. I'm sure he's fine. But I'm still just really waiting for him to win a dang Oscar. Like, it just feels crazily overdue at this point.
I've always said that Bradley Cooper is the new Danny DeVito in terms of an actor who you forget produces a lot of big movies.
Yeah. Are you guys surprised that Licorice Pizza didn't really land any, I guess it's picture, director, and screenplay, which is three big ones, but it did seem like it was surging in support.
Yeah, it was the one that surprised me the most. It didn't hit editing, didn't get any acting nominations. PTA did get in for director, which I wonder if that was even a little shaky. Yeah, that was one that I thought was really surging, and evidently was not.
Yeah.
I was very excited about the hat trick that Flea pulled off.
Yes.
That's really cool, animated, international, and documentary. I don't know if that hurts it or helps it, you know? Like, maybe it's now going to split votes between three categories. Like Honeyland, when it got two nominations, didn't win either. But I'm excited that it's represented. I've already seen at least one tweet from someone being like, wait, what's this Flea movie? So if this causes people to seek it out, that's good news.
Yeah, the international, first of all, this is like the first time in I don't know how long I've seen almost all of the international nominees before the nominations happen, which congratulations to me. I have a yak in the classroom to catch up with.
It's great.
Oh, you've seen it?
Yeah, that's why I predicted it.
Oh, I'm so excited. I mean, just that title existing at all is a thrill.
It's very sweet.
But it's a really good lineup of films. Like, I was really nervous about Flea. I think a few of us were. It felt like it had gotten kind of quiet. And actually, Flea and Summer of Soul and Coda from last year's Sundance, that's a really good track record for them and proof of longevity in this race, which we don't always get to see.
And you can include Judas and the Black Messiah, which technically premiered at that Sundance as well.
Holy crap. that makes me feel like time like doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, that was the effect of that Sundance, I think, in that Oscar season. Yeah, it was a really, really strong showing for Sundance. And it's nice that a lot of those nominees, like Flea, has multiple nominations. Worst Person in the World has multiple nominations. Parallel Mothers wasn't even submitted for that category and has multiple nominations. And obviously Drive My Car has a ton. So, it's so often that almost all those nominees, that's their only nomination. And that's starting to not be the case anymore.
Yeah.
One thing looking even further down the list is, you know, we're talking about this exciting development of the Academy with, you know, more international stuff, but you still see some of the same old, same old. Like, another year where Reba McEntire and Beyonce are nominated in the same category. I just think, enough already.
Reba did not write that song, unfortunately.
No, I know. But yeah, Diane Warren did, right?
Diane Warren juggernaut. I mean, the original song lineup, a constant hangup of mine because it's always just like brilliant to or sublime to terrible in one category. Beyonce getting in there, people are going to be happy, even though I think that song's kind of dull. I think all of the songs are kind of dull, again, which is why maybe Encanto wins on a default because it's Lin-Manuel Miranda's EGOT. I don't know. I don't know what could have happened to make it better because the choices weren't that great, but here we go.
I gotta say, I wish people would stop nominating poor Diane Warren if you're not gonna let her win. Like, what is this, 13?
13? 14?
I mean, she deserves a win. And, you know, speaking of people who work the circuit, I used to see her at, like, every event.
Everything.
She pounds the pavement and I think enjoys the experience, of course, but... God, just give her the win. And unfortunately, I don't think it's going to be this year either.
No. This is her 13th nomination. Sorry, you were right the first time, Rebecca.
Lucky 13.
And this movie premiered at 2020 Sundance, by the way.
Oh, my goodness.
I saw that. I saw it in person and was not... I did not enjoy it.
The first movie at Sundance I've ever walked out of halfway through.
it's quite bad.
Do you guys have to now finish it so that it, or do you have to finish it now that it's an Oscar nominee?
Well, I need to hear the song.
I don't remember the song. I did sit through the whole thing, but I don't know what the song is. So
you can find it. I've listened to it. You can find it on YouTube. I do believe it's Reba McEntire on a beach, which feels like a Barb and Star go to Vista Del Mar reference. So if you want to take that for it. and I wanted to talk about score, too, because Encanto showing up there for me was a pleasant surprise, even though I think we had predicted it. And Parallel Mothers getting in for score.
So
that was
good.
Yeah. And that's such a beautiful score. You know, I think I had predicted Pedro Almodovar to get in for screenplay, so it didn't make it in there. But seeing those like little bits of support all throughout, I think only further bolsters what you were talking about, David, that the Academy really is looking far beyond the American borders now.
Yeah, and I think what Rebecca and I were both hearing specifically about Parallel Mothers, like it was a movie that a lot of people were talking about just kind of offhandedly, that really had been showing up nowhere. So that was a relief. Also interesting in the score category, I expected Alexander Desplat to get nominated for French Dispatch.
Mm-hmm.
He would have been the French Dispatch's only nomination by that math. And this is the first time in, I think, 15 years that a Wes Anderson movie was not nominated for any Oscars. Darjeeling Limited was the last one.
Which, yeah. I don't know if you agree, Rebecca, at least Telluride, I think we talked about this, that like, I feel like that started at Telluride because French Dispatch really did not go over well there.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, you know, Academy people at that festival. And so maybe that was dead over Labor Day weekend. And we just found out now.
Yeah, I wonder. We got a couple people texting us about French Dispatch and how it felt like a snub and whether Wes Anderson is in the club the way we thought he was. And I wonder if we'll look back in 20 years and be like, wow, Grand Budapest was the chance and we missed it. It probably deserved more than it got, including a nomination for Ralph Fiennes, which I'll keep being mad about.
Me too.
I'm gonna keep reading the text because this is like coming in since we started recording. But to go back to Denis Villeneuve for a second, we got a text from Peter who said, "Do you think the snub for Denis in director indicates a 'let's see part two, then give that award out' thinking? Maybe. I mean, Dune went over pretty well, so presumably part two could too.
Yeah, maybe.
It didn't occur to me until now.
Yeah, same. I mean, you know, it's sort of Return of the King kind of thinking.
Yeah,
although because I guess Jackson didn't win until then, right? Because it won best,
he won at the end.
So and won best picture. So like maybe that is the thinking. But I don't know. I think director was such a strange category. And then when you put Hamaguchi for Drive My Car in there, it kind of throws everything out of whack. In a fun way, in an interesting way. I probably would have swapped out Brianna for Villeneuve, even though I don't really like Dune.
So going back into our text from listeners, Leticia from the Bay Area basically says, "I'm not in the business, but I love movies. Can you explain what campaigning really is and how it impacts winners? What can a nominee do to improve their chances of winning?" Which I think is interesting because we've talked about campaigning a lot leading up to this point, and we're about to get back into in-person stuff, we think. All signs point to yes. So what's going to happen now? Like, who is going to pound the pavement? Who's going to not pull a Lady Gaga and campaign successfully? Like, or David and Rebecca, you guys will be there for a lot of this. Can you kind of preview what campaigns will look like from here?
I love this question.
Yeah. That's a great question. I want to start with something David and I were discussing. Netflix had already sent out an invitation for a Power of the Dog reception.
Wild.
That before nominations, that it's, you know, it's being called a PGA screening, but it's Wednesday night, which is the day after nomination. So to me...
With Benedict there, a Q&A,
and with the producers. And to me, that shows sort of the level of confidence, first of all, which they should have, as we've now seen today, for that film, but also the sort of aggressive campaign that Netflix is probably going to pursue for the next few weeks until, because they want that Best Picture win at this point. And to me, that's sort of the perfect example of campaigning. It's sort of setting up a ton of these screenings and Q&As and now in-person events where you can bring out the talent, bring out the director, bring out everyone to woo voters. And it's been different this season, of course, because a lot of it has been virtual. But I think for phase two, we're going to see a lot in person for the next month, 2 months. What month is it now? Hold on.
For the next six weeks.
I think that campaigning is, it's an interesting word for this season because we've had periods where there was no in-person version of it. And then the beginning of this season really was all back to in-person for the most part. And those are two very different experiences, I think, both for voters and for those who are pounding the pavement and who are working for a nomination. And I wrote in my Drive My Car piece that I think that that movie really benefited from a lack of in-person campaigning just as voting was ramping up.
Yeah, I thought that was a fascinating point.
Because it's not a movie just by the nature of what it is and who's involved that can have much of a presence on the ground here unless they do something like Parasite and just have everybody here for all those big events, which turned out to be canceled anyway, or postponed, I should say. But it really can benefit different movies depending on what's going on. In the case of something like Being the Ricardos, you know, yes, it's a streaming movie and people can watch it at home, but I think it was also a movie that benefited a lot from Nicole Kidman being a really strong in-person campaigner. She's one of my favorite presences on the trail. She's always, you know, really open and candid and interesting to talk to and does great Q&As. And so that could hurt a film like Being the Ricardos, even if, you know, the actress can still get in. So it depends on the period and it depends on the movie, it depends on the person. But I do think movies that couldn't have as much of a campaign presence probably benefited a little bit. Or even something like Nightmare Alley, which Rebecca and I have been talking about a lot, is gauging this momentum, this virtual momentum, where Guillermo del Toro got to do all these virtual Q&As where he might not have done that much in-person stuff. And I wonder I think he's working on another film or series. So I wonder if that element for that movie really elevated it back into that Best Picture conversation because it had been fading.
Yeah, I wonder, wait, we're talking about the international scope of the Academy, and obviously there's still a lot of voters based all over, but is this where it gets back to the clubby, like, well, if you're at the Soho House for this right. party, like, your odds really increase. It gets more domestic when it's everyone being on this campaign trail.
Yeah, exactly.
There's such a fine line. I mean, I've experienced far less of the campaign events than you have, David and Rebecca, but, you know, you can't say that this is an FYC event. You just are like, we're celebrating the film. We're talking about its ideas. And
a
we're,
toast
you know,
to Jessica Chastain.
Yeah, it's very like, oh, are there awards happening? We just were proud of our film. You know, I used to go to all the Peggy Siegel events in New York, which were sort of like they would scrape up all the old Academy members out of their Upper East Side apartments and dump them in a dining room somewhere. And those were interesting because those were a little more nakedly campaigny. But then, like, the New York Times did some stuff. I remember meeting Eddie Redmayne at a thing for The Theory of Everything. And he was being literally, like, brought around by a publicist to shake people's hands. And
I might have been at that same event. Yeah. I remember how just, like, game he was. I mean, that's a huge part of how I think we all believe he won that Oscar, just being everywhere.
He was really good at it.
Yeah, he's really charming and nice and cute.
And he would kind of do that conspiratorial thing of like, oh, what are we doing here? Like, this is so crazy. Like, you know, all the while the gears are turning like award to award, you know, like, and I think it's a subtle art. And I think that Gaga is not yet trained in it, you know, and maybe that hurt her. Whereas a beloved cinephile like Guillermo del Toro, like popping up on a Zoom window to talk about things he loves, like that's a very sort of subtle, we're all in this kind of film community together kind of thing. It was not so nakedly pursuing an award.
Or Nicole Kidman, Heartbreak Feels Good in a Place Like This. Like she's good at that balance too. I mean, the acting races, if we're going to talk about campaigning, like I think what Drive My Car does is really interesting from here on out. But which acting races are we expecting to see just ramp up? Like, do we feel
actress.
Like any of them are so yeah I mean actress mm-hmm. is the one right like who's gonna win that thing
the way BAFTA votes is if you're in the top two you automatically get nominated which if they have and they have a lot of Academy overlap so the fact that none of those actresses made it to the Oscars mean it's wide open. I mean, that's just the bottom line. And if being the Ricardos doesn't have as much support outside of the acting branch, now that it's opened up, I think it's really open. I have no idea who is winning that category. I mean, I think Olivia Colman's really in it because Lost Daughter slightly overperformed, which is a good sign.
Yeah. What do you think, Rebecca?
Well, I actually kind of want to hear if Richard is sticking with his Nicole Kidman prediction for this group.
Yes.
You are?
Yeah.
I think it's really wide open, too. I agree with David. And this is a group other than Olivia Colman, who I think will really get out there to, campaign for these films. Olivia is known for not doing very much, and she likes to keep the focus on her co-stars in the film.
And wins awards anyway.
And still wins all the time. So isn't that the dream? I'm sure every actor is like, how do I get that?
Give one all-timer great Oscar acceptance speech, and then you'll be nominated for the rest of your life.
But I do think we'll see the rest of them really out there.
Yeah, it's an interesting category this year in that, with the exception, and apologies to Chastain, I think the other four are all absolutely viable winners, and appeal to different facets of, you know, individual Academy members or even within a one Academy member. You know, like, there's the kind of grand theatrics of what Kidman is doing. There's the international cachet of Penelope Cruz. There's the interior artistry of Kristen Stewart. And then there's Colman, who is kind of all of those things and beloved and classy and all that stuff. So I wonder if maybe some sort of combination of that, you know, if one person possesses it, they'll win. And I do think that's Colman, but I'm still sticking with Kidman at the moment.
I would be shocked for Kristen Stewart to win at this point. I mean, I think we all were relieved in one level or another to see her nominated, but that she's the only nominee from that entire movie.
Yeah, I think that's it.
They are going to bring out the scales, though, where they weigh people at the Oscars.
Yeah, and she's going to bring, the kid from Belfast with her to sit on the scale to mess with the system. I'm keeping an eye on supporting actor. My theory that Bradley Cooper could win the whole thing if he got nominated will never be proven wrong because he didn't get nominated. But I do think, especially with Plemons and Cody Smith-McPhee both getting nominated, like, that is up for grabs, I think.
I think Kotsur really has a good shot at winning that. It's a clear, like, the only place Coda can win. It's a well-liked movie, and he would be a groundbreaking, I think, worthy winner. I mean, he's pretty amazing in the movie.
Did you see the video of him falling out of his chair when he was celebrating?
Yeah, and he's
this morning?
Like, yes! He's also like, speaking of great campaigning.
Yeah.
he's just that delightful. He's that delightful discovery of the trail this season, I think, that you can't help but root for.
Well, it feels like a really facile comparison because they're both movies about deafness, but he reminds me so much of Paul Racy for Sound of Metal last year. Just like someone who's been working a long time, hasn't gotten this level of recognition, is like kind of bewildered but thrilled to be there. Like, it's a... Everyone likes to root for that person.
And he could have been second. I feel like Daniel Kaluuya was just so undeniable that race never really got off the ground. But this is not one of those years.
Yeah. And I think even though Ariana DeBose, the supporting actress, still looks very strong, like, I don't think she is as undeniable as Daniel Kaluuya last year. Like, that race is also up for grabs, I think. I was so happy to see Anjanou Ellis get in. I know you were too, David.
I was so relieved, especially when I heard Buckley. I was like, oh, she's no way. But we only got to E. The alphabet went from B to E there. It was really.
Yeah, they announced director, I think, in order of title of movie, I think.
And so when they started too.
Yeah, so when they started with Brent, I was like, God, did Paul Thomas Anderson get snubbed? And then was surprised the alphabet worked out in the end.
I'm Nomi Fry, and this week on Critics at Large, we're talking about the delights and shortcomings of the new movie Challengers. It starred Zendaya at the center of a tennis triangle and a very steamy love triangle.
Who are her loyalties to? Will she be tempted by the other one? How do these guys reckon their professional playing ambition with the romantic and sexual feelings about this mysterious woman? And such we have it. We have a conflict between three people in a game meant for two.
Is it a sports movie or a sex movie? Find out on Critics at Large from The New Yorker. New episodes drop every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, let's close and talk about Best Picture. We mentioned earlier, Power of the Dog got 12 nominations. That's pretty huge. To me, that seems to cement it as a pretty undeniable frontrunner. But then again, there's the Dune theory. And then again, there's a lot of other movies in the list. Where do we think this is headed?
Well, I think it's Power of the Dog.
Yeah.
6 years ago, Ooh, a film that didn't win, that didn't seem like it was going to win much, but it was like close to the top. But you know, there were other bigger movies. It won screenplay, and then won Best Picture, and that movie was Spotlight. And I think Don't Look Up could potentially pull that off. Also, I don't know that it'll win screenplay, and I think that Adam McKay not getting nominated in director is a big mark against that movie. But it did get an editing nomination, it got a screenplay nomination, it got a score nomination, and it got picture. So I still think that movie, even though it's a horrifying thought, could somehow be the number two on enough ballots. And I think, you know, more and more we sort of theorize that that is how best pictures win these days. And I don't think it's going to be, you know, I think there's a lot of Power of the Dog number ones. I think there's a lot of Belfast number ones, but maybe that has broad enough, sort of strong enough support that it could be put over the top.
Well, I think the question is Belfast still the number two, which we've been kind of assuming for a long time. But as we were saying, it underperformed in some of those craft categories, and maybe it's not going to get as many number one votes as we thought. And then Richard, like you said, something else is going to swoop in.
Yeah. I mean, I think the problem for Don't Look Up compared to Spotlight is it didn't get any acting nominations, and it's pretty hard without that. I mean, just statistically, I guess it doesn't necessarily mean much in terms of the narrative of the movie. I still think it's too polarizing of a movie to win on a preferential ballot, so I'm not inclined to think it really can go that far. I think it's Power in Belfast. I think Belfast kind of has that more Green Book level nomination total, maybe, where it didn't do as well below the line, but still is very well liked in a very particular way by a certain segment of the Academy. And Power just feels to me kind of overpowering at this point. It did so well everywhere. I think production design seemed like such a long shot, and it got in there even. I mean, it hit with every single branch, and those are the people voting for Best Picture.
Is there something to be said for the fact that they're both Netflix movies, Don't Look Up and Power of the Dog, and Netflix is maybe now just going to shift its funding and all that over to Power of the Dog, and Don't Look Up will kind of twist in the wind?
Yeah.
I think so. And also, they, again, couldn't get that third Best Picture nominee. It happened last year with Ma Rainey's Black Bottom and this year with Tick, Tick, Boom. So I think that this year they will learn to really focus their efforts for this final campaign.
Yeah, I mean, The Irishman led a nominations total 2 years ago, whenever it was, and Roma might have. I don't remember if Roma was the most.
It was
nominations.
Definitely close.
Yeah, like they've come so close so many times, and the path for them is pretty clear. But then again, we're going to spend the next 6 weeks trying to think of reasons it won't happen because we'll get really bored. So who knows?
We'll find some.
The problem is, if Don't Look Up doesn't win, it means the Academy is pro-climate change. So they might have to think
this
about
is our
that.
Only chance to stop that comet heading toward Earth. And the Academy needs to take their mission seriously. Well, coming up is not too much. We have about 2 weeks, and then the SAG Awards are at the end of February. David and Rebecca, you guys will be there. I think it's going to be fascinating to see what all goes on there. Is that going to be kind of our first insight into how these nominations change the chemistry of the race?
Yes. Lady Gaga will win. Ruth Negga will win. Jared Leto will win. Or Ben Affleck might surprise. And, yeah. but yes, probably. I think so.
I think it'll be exciting, as long as it remains in person, to also hear some of these people talk on stage, because we haven't gotten to hear that
seriously
all season. And, you know, to see what they're doing for their own messaging for Phase 2, the ones that are nominated. But it'll be interesting. I'm excited to go to something.
Me too. I'm getting my outfits ready.
Yeah, because right after that, the Santa Barbara Film Festival kicks off with tributes to a lot of these people who are nominated. Then the Oscar Nominees Luncheon, the Indie Spirit Awards, the UGA Awards. Like, March will just kind of be bam, 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 one after another. So we miss seeing all these people now, but we'll be sick of them before too long.
And please send us subtext messages telling us who you want to hear say a yak in the classroom when presenting International Future at the Oscars. So, because I think that's really going to be the highlight of the whole show.
Oh, yeah, I have to say, and I tweeted this too, but in a meeting yesterday, I was thinking how excited it would be to hear Leslie Jordan say Ryusuke Hamaguchi, and he did it twice, and it was so great both times. Flawless.
He made good on that potential.
He really did. And I think Denis Villeneuve, he also had a real moment with, but Hamaguchi was it. Also, Tracee Ellis Ross and Leslie Jordan were a great announcement pair, I think. I was excited to see them.
I enjoyed the bit where the guy in the break describe his enthusiasm for Jesse Buckley because he loved Charlie Kaufman movies and loved her. And I'm thinking of anything. that was a twist for the start of that bit. I did not expect that.
Yeah, well, we have to seek out that guy and end his career now because he did our job for us in the middle of the Oscar nominations broadcast. So, yeah. Sorry, it's going to be us next year through whatever means necessary. Well, and Richard, like you said, people should keep texting us with their thoughts on the nominations at joinsubtext.com/littlegoldmen or 213-513-4203. I know I'm jumping ahead, but really that is such a great place for us to hear from you. And we will keep taking your questions as the season goes on. And let us know who you want to hear about, what other categories you want to hear about. We'll do the shorts like we always do. We haven't talked much about documentary this year. There's a lot of stuff to get into, so your feedback is really appreciated. And in the meantime, read all of our nominations coverage at VF.com. Follow us on Twitter at Little Gold Men or on our own. I am at Katie Rich and Richard.
Rylaws.
And David.
David Kinfield 97.
And Rebecca.
Becca M. Ford.
This week's episode was produced and edited by Brett Fuchs. And this week's award for the best plot description of the movie Gremlins goes to Katie Rich.
The little monsters are furious.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.
From PRX.